Your LinkedIn profile is a shop window to the world. There's 950 million people walking in front of the shop window every single day. And what you don't want them to go is, oh, look, there's another salesperson. I'm going to keep away from them, or boring corporate person. What they want, you want them to do is to walk past and go, do you know, that's really interesting. I'm going to actually walk towards that. That person, I think, can actually help me.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Timothy Hughes on how sales and marketing can regain buyer trust. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Thank you for joining us on Centricity. Today, we have a conversation with Tim Hughes. Remember, Centricity is the podcast for C-suite executives who want practical, implementable, repeatable insights that help break through the barriers that hold back your sales and marketing performance from success. As we like to say in Centricity, what if there was a proven playbook that could predict a buyer's behavior that would allow salespeople, marketers, and customer success teams to proactively be prepared for what buyers need as they traverse a sales journey? This isn't a pipeline thinking. It's buyer-centered understanding of what buyers need as they move forward. That would be a no-brainer, right? That's the idea behind Centricity. It's the framework we've used for over a decade to help executives earn $287 for every dollar they invest. Tim Hughes' expertise around social selling beautifully aligns with that thinking of understanding and giving buyers what they need as they look for content. What's at stake, listeners? Tim's promise is a 30% lift in sales and a lowered customer acquisition cost. So I'd listen. I'm going to listen. Let me start right now. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Sean. I really appreciate you inviting me onto your show. I'm really excited to be talking to you.
Well, we know what the stakes are, but why should we listen to you? I'm going to start. You've got 32,000. Actually, you've got more than 32,000 LinkedIn followers. So maybe you've got some credibility about social selling. And social selling is the reason we're here. I read your book, fabulous. It's on my must-read list. You've got all kinds of chops. One of the others I think that's an incredible credibility builder is LinkedIn said you're one of the top 8 sales experts globally. That's not bad either. I think it's worth listening. I think we should do this. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about social selling.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, I think we have a definition of what social selling is. And because I think a lot of people actually make the mistake, they think what happens is that we get spammed on social. Someone will basically connect to us and then they do a pitch, generally called a connect and pitch. And that's not social selling, it's spam. And people need to realize that. So we have a definition of social selling, which is using your presence and behavior on social media to build influence, make connections, grow relationships and trust, which lead to conversations and commercial interaction. What we're talking about is providing organizations with conversations at scale. We are in the pipeline business or helping people generate pipeline, and we are in the business of helping people generate revenue. We've got customers that are doing multi-million dollar deals using social media. But the main thing that we talk about is creating conversations, because what you sell, what I sell, what your listeners sell all require a conversation, and we can get people conversations at scale, and conversations create sales.
What struck me as I read your book, Tim, was that very thing, that conversation. And a buyer doesn't want to get a pitch, right? A buyer wants to get some value. A buyer wants to have a conversation. And if you just come at me with some sort of predictable introduction, and I know that Tim, can you stop the world from saying, hey, I noticed you on LinkedIn, or I noticed, or I was browsing your company's website. Just stop. I hate these predictable intros because it's a pitch. How do you advise people to not pitch when they're making these at scale introductions?
It's interesting. I do a lot of work helping clients and seeing them, the realization on their face. We're training a whole bunch of organizations at the moment, and the realization that they are actually not in control. When they pitch, they're not in control. The buyer is. And, you know, if I say, you know, buy my, everybody goes to the market and says, buy my product because we're great. So the fact of the matter is you're not differentiated in any shape or form. Now, there are certain things that you can sell when, by pitching, you know, if it will be low cost commodity items. But, you know, in the business that I'm in, which is, you know, mainly mid-market or larger B2B enterprise organizations, pitching just doesn't work anymore. We're just immune to it. We've spent our lives being sent emails, or even when, you know, I'm a bit older to understand, you know, opening, you know, getting letters and mail shots and stuff. And we're just immune to it. And now people are doing it on social media as well. I'm just spamming you. And the problem that we have is that this interruption marketing is the thing that, you know, kicked off, was it in the 1980s? And people are addicted to it and they can't stop it. And cold calling, email, advertising, it just doesn't work anymore. We just have too much. And people have to understand that people don't want that anymore.
There is such a challenge, and we're in the exact same space, of course, that emerging middle market B2B space. And the performance marketing efforts, I'm literally in the process right now dialing back the spend on a performance marketing program in RevOps to lead to content. And really, content's a terrible word. We should use the word insights, because nobody needs more content. But an insight marketing program that's niche-y, that's specialized, that's very unique and relatable to a buyer in a specific industry, then that becomes pretty interesting. And that positioning becomes interesting. So I think it's a very interesting model. What have you seen successful in helping these addicted marketing firms and these addicted ad agencies and businesses break the pattern?
Well, we actually recently took a cold calling team, and we train them in social selling. So they've become a partner of ours. And we've been tracking the results. So what happened was that as of the 1st of January this year, we've been tracking, they've been doing cold outreach purely through social selling. They're not spamming people with email. They're not making cold calls. And we're getting a 9% response rate. So we know that with 100 people that we connect to, 9% of the people will want a conversation. This is not connect and pitch. This is just connecting people to have conversations. We're not using any form of automation, because I always get asked that as well. And the interesting thing also, that whenever you do any sort of interruption, what you're looking for is a next action. So the next action, if you cold called somebody, you would be looking for a demo or discovery call or something like that. We're getting a 33.6% response on all of those meetings. All of our SDRs get at least 10 meetings a week. We have SDRs complaining that they have too many meetings. One of them had 25 one week. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of people say to me is cold calling isn't dead. It is with these figures. Nobody using interruption marketing can get a response of 9% and a 99% response rate, and then a 33.6% next action. You can't at the moment SDRs having 10 meetings a week. It just doesn't happen. So if you have 10 salespeople and you're selling an average of a 100K deal, by cold calling, you are now falling behind by $1.2 million. Is cold calling dead? Well, if you're doing it, you're falling behind.
And that's interesting. So maybe the habit, I asked you the question of how do you get people to break the habit? It's probably there's a perceived risk, because the cold calling is generating some revenue. So the perceived risk is that
generally
I lose it.
We would see cold calling generating one meeting a week. We can generate 10. So you have that as a business leader and as a board, obviously you need to take that into account, and you need to go to your board and you need to say, we're carrying on cold calling and we know that we're going to lose 9 meetings a week, and we know that has a revenue in, and you just have to deal with it as it comes, because we're not saying that cold calling is dead. We're just saying that there is a different method.
That's amazing. So you told me a second ago that, I guess you told all of our audience a second ago, that you were getting these meetings. But I also think that I heard you say that interruption marketing and cold calling is asking for the next step. So am I correct to say that what I heard you say is the buyers are actually requesting the next step in this model instead of...
What we find is that in the way that we teach... So I can't speak for other people who do social selling. What we've done is that we've created our own methodology. It's our methodology. We've actually now had it certified by the Institute of Sales Professionals. And so you can now do a certificate on it as well. We're the only people in the world that do this. And what we've done is that we've created this method to get conversations using social media, and you can get them at scale. And what we're finding is that actually people are interested in what we have to say. And more, and also importantly, the cold callers, when we first started talking, said, we hate our jobs. We hate it. I'm going to resign. This is horrible. I'm basically trying to force things on people. Now they're actually saying they can't wait to, you know, they wake up in the morning and they love it. So there's actually a mental health thing here for doing the cold outreach. So that's what we're seeing. And we're seeing, and, you know, using a method that we've created, people are quite often will turn around and say, okay, explain to us what you do.
I think your answer is going to be, I did it wrong. So I read your book. I went to a client and I pitched your idea. I did tell them where it came from. So I give proper attribution. And I got such skepticism from the executive team and such skepticism from the salespeople. When you face, and the answer is I should have said, y'all need to call Tim. By the way, if I was going to tell them to call you, reach out, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best place to get me is LinkedIn. So I'm Timothy Hughes or Tim Hughes on LinkedIn, which is probably the best place where people will find me.
So you like social media as a tool to reach out? Oh, okay, that makes sense, doesn't it, with what you do?
Yes. Strangely enough, Sean, yes. I spend a lot of time on social media, but there again, we're a social organization. You know, we've never advertised, we've never cold called, we've never placed an advert, we've never sent a spam email. 7 years on, we're still making a load of money and growing. So we must have something going for us.
Something.
And what we do is that we teach organizations how to move to a modern form of sales and marketing, because we know that the modern buyers basically moved to digital. 70% of the world's population are now on social media and active. And active on social media means that they spend 2 hours, 24 minutes a day on social media. So it's not just about posting pictures on Facebook and stuff. 73% of people now are actively searching for brands on social media. And this is not my opinion, this is data. And so we know that the modern buyer has moved to digital. So therefore, what's got to happen is that people have to transform their sales teams away from the analog world. And what you're seeing in the analog world is layoffs and a return on investment that basically isn't happening because of their marketing facilities don't work anymore. And what you'll see is that people moving to digital are going back to the growth and the returns that they expect. You know, we expect, you implement our methodology of social selling, you will get a 30% increase in revenue.
As data compliance laws become more stringent, many organizations will soon have non-compliant CRM data. Maybe you have insufficient first-party data, or you bought information from an improperly validated third party. However, you got it. Fixing it before the 2023 deadline should be a top priority. Fitzmartin's Wake the Dead program takes dead CRM prospects and applies a behavioral science model to re-engage them into your pipeline. In this process, you can reclaim old prospects or delete old ones, giving you a clean and compliant database with new opportunities from previously forgotten contacts. By retargeting with email and text automation, clients you might have considered dead or unresponsive will move forward and become potential prospects once again. For more information, check out the show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
So the obvious answer when I pitched this idea, these concepts to my client, the obvious answer is I should have pointed them to you. What do you do? What has been your experience when you do run into that skeptical executive and the skeptical salesperson? I mean, I hear the ROI number and I would hope that they're motivated by that, but there's also a skill set and not all salespeople are comfortable in that world or they think of it in a different way. And I'll tell you, one of the specific arguments that was presented to me was pretty close to quote, "Hey, Tim, my social media account's mine. That's my family. That's my pictures. I don't want to bring work to the boundary of social media. And I don't want my family's pictures being posted where my clients are going to see it or my prospects. I don't understand how, help me understand how you would break down that barrier."
So we often get responses like, we can't do all of our sales on social media. And we're not telling you to do that. We're using this as an ability for you to create conversations. And what you'll find is that people say they can't do certain things because they use it as excuses because either they don't want to or whatever. So what we always do is that we have an introductory presentation that we give. It takes about 40 minutes. What it does is it shows the data and it shows case studies of what people are doing. And it also shows what the modern buyer, because you've got to remember that this is about the modern buyer and not about you. So the mistake that those people are making is it's about the salesperson. And the other thing is that what we know is that the research shows that people come to social media to be social. It is social media. It's not spam media. It's not send out loads of brochure media. It is social media. We go there to have conversations. We don't go there to read brochures. Research shows that as well. So if you're pushing out, getting your sales team to push out brochures, you're wasting your time. In fact, there's some new research that comes out this week that shows that if you are pushing out brochures as a salesperson, your sales, you're increasing the sales time of your deals by 21%. What we find in our research is that if you use human content will get twice as much engagement as non-human content. And it stands to reason because it's social media. What we're looking for is a mechanism to have a conversation. Now, we often say to salespeople is, so what's the best way to get to know one of your customers? They say, well, I take them to a game or I take them out for a meal. And you say, okay, so what you do, I guess, is you take your brochures and you read them out. And they say, don't be stupid. Of course, I don't do that. I go along, we talk about our family or the fact that they like barbecues or they like baseball or whatever it is. I say, okay, so you actually can do more business better by having your customers know what you're like as a human. Yes. So why are you concerned about putting stuff on social media about what you're doing? Now, you know what? If you think about what I'm looking for as a buyer is, can I trust Sean Doyle? Is Sean Doyle an expert? Is he the person that's going to help me? Because in projects go wrong. And I want to know that he's going to be the person that's going to help. Now, so I'm working with a company at the moment and the COO is a big sailor. He's got a boat. And funnily enough, he gets lots of people coming to him asking about sailing and then says, and what do you do? Ian, so what do you do? Oh, by the way, I do cybersecurity software. Oh, right, we're actually looking for cybersecurity software. Now, what this is doing is that this is, from an inbound perspective, you would expect people to connect with you based on your experiences and what you do. Right now, everybody goes to market and says the same thing, buy my product because we're great. There is no differential against any other product. The only USP you have is your people, their experiences, what they've done, what their interests are, because while you may sell a product and say, yes, my product is different from this much from my competitors, the buyer can't see that. They're not the expert. You are. So the problem you have is even though that you are different, nobody can see that. And what we have is our people going out onto social media, and that's giving us a connection. Now, it's not just a connection in sales. It's a connection in HR. It's a connection in purchasing. You know, we have clients that no longer use recruitment consultants or advertising for recruitment anymore because they don't have to, because they've got people queuing up around the block saying, you're putting out really interesting content. That ESG article that you put out the other week, that shows that you have a purpose. That's a company that I want to work for. And this is fundamentally different, providing organizations with real digital competitive advantage in a digital world.
That's amazing. So I think you just answered my next question, and that is, what's a definition of human content? Because if my company produced an article on ESG, would that not be kind of a brochure?
Well, it depends. If you're selling ESG, then yes, it is. But if you're saying that, you know, if you're writing an article and say, I'm really proud of working for this company, so proud we have this ESG policy. This isn't just words. This is what we actually do. And put that out. That's not salesy in any shape or form. The same as, you know, taking a photo of you. This is me and the team at a conference. That's not unprofessional, but what you're doing is that you're providing a human element. You know, people can't see this, but behind me, I have my great-grandfather's gramophone. It's a horned gramophone. I put out videos about my great-grandfather's gramophone because it's about me. You can't see this, but I have put paraphernalia around me because from my father, he was a sound engineer at the BBC. So I've got his reel-to-reel tape recorder behind me and I've got one of his microphones. But again, that's about me. And what that does is it creates conversations. You may not be interested in my great-grandfather's gramophone, but you will remember me as there's a guy on there, he does social selling. He's got this gramophone, you know, that thing with a hook. Anyway, people will remember it.
It is pretty cool, by the way. The thing I think has always been true is engineers make great marketers. So, Tim, you started your career as your formal training.
I did electronic engineering. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's evidence again that engineers make great marketers. I rarely get anybody who agrees with that, but I mean, you're systematic, you're process, you're data driven. There's logical steps. Anyway, we're not here to talk about engineers as marketers, but that's a great answer. Thank you. So given the rapidly evolving digital landscape, do you recommend, is there an obvious, I guess you pointed me toward LinkedIn. Is that the beast? Is that the one place to focus your efforts? You also have a TikTok account. I saw you dancing some dances. Okay, no, Tim did not dance at all.
No, I was going to say, I don't remember that one. Maybe I had a good night.
You have some football club must have won that you follow. Tell us about the platforms. I know it's a very tactical question. People are always interested in tactics. Where should they invest their money and time if they're trying
I think if you're B2B, really the platform you need to invest in is LinkedIn. But this isn't about understanding LinkedIn and the algorithm. It's about understanding how to be social, because you may find that actually the person you're trying to contact is not active on LinkedIn. They're active on Instagram. And what you need to be able to do is actually not work out how to use LinkedIn in this particular way, but how do I go to the person on Instagram and have a conversation with them without just turning up and being either a stalker or a spammer? And that's what we do, is that we teach people how to be social. If you're thinking about other platforms, you probably need to be on Twitter, because Twitter is a place which is, because it's an open platform, it tends to be used a lot by the social media measuring tools. So if you're looking to be, an influencer, and I mean that from even from a vertical perspective, I'm not talking about necessarily being a Kim Kardashian. You may actually want to be the leading technical or commercial digital influencer in your market or vertical. We're working with an organization, and I was actually with them today, and they said that they were using Twitter. They're in the ed tech space, and they went onto Twitter. There was a particular ed tech conference in America. They're based in the UK, and they got two meetings off the back of looking the hashtags on for that ed tech conference and getting conversations with people. So, you know, it's still applicable, certainly from a B2B perspective. And then, you know, it's really about how much time you want to spend on social media. But they're the kind of the first 1-2 that I would recommend you get to.
Can you successfully have your marketing team run your social media platform, or does it need to be a human to a human?
We've proven it. So the thing to do for marketers to do is to take your branded social media accounts, take the brand off and put the person's picture on it. And I bet you get a better response. We've tried it. And every time we do it, we always get a better response. And the reason for that is that people want a relationship with a person. They don't want a relationship with the brand. So for example, did you know that Cristiano Ronaldo has 7 times more followers on social media than the top 10 brands in the world? And that's because that's because people want a relationship with a person and see that as a reflection on the person rather than they do with brand. And this is one of the difficulties that many companies grapple with, which is that my relationship with you, Sean, is with you. If you go and work for IBM, my relationship carries over to IBM. And unfortunately, the genie's out of the bottle. And this is the way that the world works now.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the days when I used to advise CEOs to make sure their sales team left the Rolodex, and they literally were required to leave the Rolodex on the desk when they left. And half the people listening don't even know what I just said.
Yes. Okay, nobody under the age of 30 will know what a Rolodex is, Sean.
What a Rolodex is, right. That's true. It's a LinkedIn account, basically.
It's an analog LinkedIn account.
That's a good description, actually. Tim, two final questions as we wrap. One, what's the question I didn't ask that you love to talk about? There's something that's like, gosh, you just wait for someone to ask you this question so you can answer with this incredible insight. And I blew it.
So Sean, one of the questions I often answer is, what do we need to do to get started? And the three things you need is you need a buyer-centric profile. Again, this is not about you. This is about the buyer. Your LinkedIn profile is a shop window to the world. There's 950 million people walking in front of that shop window every single day. And what you don't want them to go is, oh, look, there's another salesperson. I'm going to keep away from them, or boring corporate person. What you want them to do is to walk past and go, do you know, that's really interesting. I'm going to actually walk towards that. That person, I think, can actually help me. The second thing you need is a wide and varied network. People are on social media, fact, and they're searching for your products and services. And if you're not getting people walking towards you and asking you about your products and services, then you're leaving money on the table. We have clients that are doing multi-million dollar deals based on their salesperson looking good and being in the right place from a network. And the third thing is that people are looking for insight. You mentioned this earlier on. Your content needs to be insightful. You need to be telling people things they don't know. You need to be talking about what you think, you know, what's your opinion? What are your three things that you think are important for your particular vertical or market? That's what people are looking for. You know, when I'm on social media and I'm searching, I'm looking for someone that's going to help me, someone that's going to have insights. And if you're putting out brochures, we just avoid it. You're wasting your time. And in fact, you teach the algorithm to ignore you. And so the three things you need, buyer-centric profile, you need to have a wide and varied network, and you need to have insightful.
The first thing you said, buyer-centric profile, that's what so connected me to your thinking and what we preach constantly. The name of this podcast, Centricity, is that a buyer has very specific, predictable needs. And because they're not buyers, they're humans. And we base all of our work, all of our profiling, if you want to call it that, on the idea that most folks don't, they'll build a profile. Marketing technology has created the globe with this idea of a persona, and it's a very thin front end of a persona, of a profile, of understanding what a buyer needs, and it ignores the fact that as we go through change, as we buy a product or service, our needs change. I need something very different at the beginning of my journey than I do at the end of the journey. And Centricity is all about mapping out each step and understanding that what the buyer needs. I love that you just said it's not about you. That's brilliant. So my creative director is known for saying this, Tim. This would be a good lead to our last question. In real life at home, when we talk to ourselves, we call it crazy. But when businesses talk to themselves, they call it marketing. So we do that as marketers, which is just incredible. We talk about ourselves all the time. And it would be the worst. And you even did the alert. It would be the worst first lunch with a prospect ever. Let me tell you about myself. Let me tell you about me. Let me tell you about me. Let me tell you about me. Yes. More yeah. about me.
Yeah. It let me tell you how many times I've won President's Club.
Right.
I've seen salespeople that says on their LinkedIn profile, it doesn't matter how many, it doesn't matter what happens. Once I get my teeth into a customer, either they die or I will die first. And it's like, and you're expecting to do business on social media. Really?
I have a good friend who's starting up a new company, and he doesn't do this publicly, but internally he calls his sales team the assassins. Salespeople do think that way, and it's not the person I want to go on a first visit with to learn thing. So final wrap up, the most transformative thing you've learned about social selling recently. What is that?
For us, I think it was about getting the figures. Actually getting this team and getting, you know, we've been able to show, we've had posts where people put stuff out and they were able to get six C-level meetings off that, two proposals and one purchase order. And, you know, we've been able to speed up sales cycles and stuff. And that was always very interesting. But getting this team together of people doing cold outbound, which is really the area that we haven't really got into. And there was a lot of people saying, you can't do cold outbound with social selling, relationships take a long time. Social selling takes a long time. And what we've proven with it is that's not the case. And getting a 9% response and then a 33% next action is transformational. And what we've realized is that the cold callers and the cold calling experts on LinkedIn have gone very quick.
Okay. I just had one more I've got to ask. Is there a point at which point scale matters? In other words, if I've got 500 LinkedIn connections, and that includes my mother and my uncle who think I do some cool stuff. Like, does that matter? At what point does your LinkedIn account start getting traction?
Well, the average person on LinkedIn has 930 connections. So that gives you a benchmark in terms of average. We would always recommend that you connect. So LinkedIn allow you about 200 connections a week, and you should use those because that's actually 200 opportunities for conversations. Now, that's not spamming people. That's connecting people in a particular way, which we teach people, and using that as a way to generate those conversations. But you know, you need to be connected to your prospects, your customers, the people that influence your prospects and customers. And we have a client, which is a supply chain software company, they say for every deal that they work on, there's 100 stakeholders.
Mm.
So that means that for every deal that they work on, they have to be connected to at least 100 people per account. And on the basis you probably don't know who those stakeholders are, you might need to be connected to 200 or 300 people to get the coverage within the account. And, you know, in these days where your sponsor and that could be laid off and then you end up the deals basically gone down the tubes, then you need to have what LinkedIn would call multi-thread, which is be connected to lots of different people all over the place. You know, you could be connected to a lot of people in a particular account, but there again, that doesn't take a long time. You know, we teach people you can send takes 2 hours to send 200 connection requests if you do it in the right way without being spammy and without using automation.
Tim, was that story in the book or was that something I read on a blog post of yours?
Which is that?
The scale of you've got your sponsor and then there might be 100 people within a deal.
Yeah, so you may have read that in the book. I can't remember.
I think I did.
I'm a bit like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. I actually don't remember writing the book.
Well, you're not as good looking as them either. So,
it's funny. I come on podcasts and people said in chapter 3 and page, and I'm thinking I don't remember what I wrote. But you know,
I think it was in the book.
I think there's an element of scale. You also find that what happens is that people are connection snobs. So senior people, for example, if you go immediately. You know what salespeople say? Oh, yeah, we sell to the C-suite. Da, 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 da. If you go immediately to the C-suite, what you'll often find is that they won't connect. What they're looking for is, okay, so who is this Sean Doyle? And they'll look at their LinkedIn profile and they go, well, he's not connected to anybody in my team. It's obviously a spammer. Ignore. Yeah. Whereas if you go to Sean and you're connected to the people in KPMG, you're connected to Steve in architecture, you're connected to Dorothy in the user department, clearly you understand our business and you understand our business needs, I will connect you. And that's just about understanding some simple psychology about people and buyers. But we teach that in our social selling and influence.
Check Tim Hughes out on LinkedIn. Go to Amazon, get the book. Or is there a better way to get that social selling book? It's a great book.
The best place to get the book is Amazon worldwide. It's Social Selling Techniques to Influence Buyers and Changemakers. And it's the second edition, which has a yellow cover.
I mean, I read a lot of books and it is absolutely at the top of the stack. It's on my hand.
Thank you, Sean. That's really generous of you to say so.
Do I get a commission? Because I've bought about 20 at this point. I'm hoping I do. No, fabulous. Tim, I knew it was a rock star moment when you agreed to join us and our audience. Well, we're going to break this into two chunks because it's so much meat. And I bet we scratched 5% of what you have to offer. So thank you so much for being on Centricity. And we will look forward to promoting and sharing more about you. And this has been a home run. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Sean. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.